welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and really, absolutely, unbelievably thrilled at this particular moment to be talking to nothing more or less than one of the most brilliant singer-songwriters of the past 25 years. She became an MTV darling, of course, with the band Till Tuesday and the hit song Voices Carry. Then, after that first album, she morphed to kind of a more melodic sensibility into what had started kind of as a synth-pop band. Went off, did solo work that just created tremendously beautiful, intelligent songs year after year. She got, of course, the famous story of being screwed over by record companies. She started her own, and she's still doing that with Super Ego Records. The main thing is that her new album, Charmer, just came out on Super Ego Records, and she's going to be in our area this coming week. She's going to be at the Ogden Theater in Denver on October 9th, and then on Wednesday, October 10th, she'll be in Fort Collins at the Lincoln Center, so less than half an hour away from where we are. So that is all by way of saying welcome, Amy Mann, to the Daverhood. It's a thrill to be talking to you.
Well, I feel like I couldn't possibly live up to that intro, which makes me sound like the most fascinating person on Earth.
Well, I gave the same exact intro to comedian Marty Allen, so it's you know, you shouldn't feel that.
Good.
But let's go right to the new album, Charmer, which, would you say that the theme is dissecting charm and all these different kinds of people who use, I don't say a false face, but a candy coating on the face to what they give out to the world at large?
Well, I think that can vary. I mean, first of all, I want to stress it's not like a concept album, but it is a theme that I definitely revisited throughout the record. And I do, I am like very fascinated by charming people and, you know, sort of trying to figure out what charm consists of and, you know, is there always a sinister edge or is, you know, like, is there always an agenda or, you know, is sometimes the agenda, you know, like, I like people and I want people to have a good time. Like, that's perfectly fine, but there are definitely people where where the flattery gets sort of put on a little too thick, and you start thinking, okay, what are you up to? Like, what's the end game? And you know, it's not always easy to tell. Like, sometimes there's a feeling and a suspicion, but it's not always easy to tell really what's going on.
And it's also something I think that we all do to some extent. There's always a front face and a private person, either for you when you're on stage trying to charm an audience, or, you know, if we're trying to be with a tax accountant and get him to move a decimal point over, you know?
Yeah, and sometimes you just want to be nice, or you want to make the other person feel at ease, and that's part of it. So, you know, the motivations are varied and not always... you know, not always selfish and not always dark, but, you know, but those people exist, and it's very weird to encounter them.
Well, speaking of dark and light, you hear a little bit more synthesizer work on Charmer than some of the more recent albums. Was that a concerted effort? Is it sort of like a synthesizer is a slicker sort of sound, more surfacey, and therefore it dovetails with charm somehow?
I think that part of it, like, the idea of charm kind of got me thinking about the sound of the record that I was sort of writing the record while I was thinking about this and while I was thinking about how I wanted it to sound. And I started to think, you know, like, charm sort of makes me think of pop music in a certain way. So I was kind of, like, trying to figure out, like, well, what is my definition of pop music? It's definitely not, you know, the pop music of today, which I'm not that interested in, but... you know, pop music sort of in different decades has, you know, I was thinking, like, well, in the 60s, like, to me, classic pop music was Glen Campbell singing Jimmy Webb songs, you know, like,
okay.
Great, great classic songs, like, you know, kind of story songs, like, that really, you know, like, were just really great songwriting. And, you know, and then the 70s, kind of like, you know, pre-disco-y, like, maybe ABBA or that kind of thing, and in the 80s. The Cars and Blondie. So I was just kind of thinking about these different touchstones of pop, you know, pop stylings that I liked, and you know, that became an influence on both the writing and the recording.
Well, would it be fair to say, because, you know, it's hard for me. I'm 48 years old at this point, so you know, I'm not into the pop of today. But the pop that you're somewhat dismissing of now, could it be in 20 years that, those will be greatest hits, even for your generation, my generation?
Maybe. I mean, I just think, you know, that the it's more in the sort of production. I mean, I think some of the melodies in the songs are really nice, and, you know, like all the lyrics are, I don't know, like, it's not really my thing, but you know, there's definitely some lyrics that are kind of funny and interesting. And I'm thinking, like, the real sort of dance pop hits, you know, like the stuff that's really huge. But the thing is, like, so many of those songs are written by committee, you know, like the real hit doctors come in, and, you know, so it's almost like this professional element that drives in and interfaces with the artist to create this sort of you know, song structure. It's, you know, and I'm more from an era of you know, like the guy sitting alone at the piano writing a song, or, you know, like the singer-songwriter on the acoustic guitar.
Yeah, even in the era of the Brill Building, where they were basically treating it like a 9-to-5 job, it was two people in a room with real talent hashing out songs and trying to do the best they can, even in a fairly limited idiom, you know?
Yeah, and I think a different kind of emphasis on harmony and melody and lyrics, too. That doesn't really exist today.
Now, speaking of art by committee, you were at one point working on a musical stage version, or at least the nascent stages of it, of The Forgotten Arm. Is that not going to go anywhere, or what?
We were working with a writer that didn't really happen, and we kind of jettisoned the story that we had. I'm writing new songs for with Paul Bryan, my producer, who produced this record. And we're working with Oscar Eustace from the Public Theater. But and the new writer is David Henry Hwang, and he's, like, a respected book writer. But he's just really busy. So, you know, and they, you know, him and Oscar live in New York. And it's just, like, it's very hard to kind of get everybody's schedule together where we can meet up. And honestly, like, at this point, David just has to finish the first draft. And then, you know, then we can all meet in New York and you know, talk about the next move and, like, what songs are going to go where, and then Paul and I can, you know, if we have to rewrite stuff or come up with new stuff, we'll do that. But you know, the problem is that with a musical, there's a lot of moving parts, and you don't always get to, you know, it's not really up to you and your effort. You have to kind of wait for other people to do their thing.
True. And I am sort of a theater-related person. I'm curious what musicals might have influenced you or that you've loved over the years.
My two favorite musicals are Cabaret and Chicago. I think I like there's like kind of a harmonic, melodic sensibility in the songs that I really like. I really like Guys and Dolls. I mean, I like old-fashioned musicals. I like musicals. I'm not, you know, I'm like, that would be,
sure,
that, you know, that would sort of be my ideal to emulate that kind of thing. But coming from a sort of a singer-songwritery perspective, it's, you know, I think it's a tricky thing to figure out how the songs fit in, because to me, like, watching a musical that has, I don't know, like, song, I think you need to approach songwriting in a different way, because it's not just watching a performance of somebody singing their songs on stage, you know, it's a different thing. People are listening to the lyrics in a different way, and it has to advance the plot in a different way.
True. Although, speaking of a mix of, you know, the scene and the song and the music and humor and darkness, are you guys still doing acoustic vaudeville out in California?
Oh, no. That was just like a one-time thing we did about 10 years ago.
Oh, I thought it was sort of an every year ongoing thing, and you do the Christmas shows and things like that.
No, the Christmas show is a different, yeah, that's a different thing. The acoustic vaudeville was me and my husband, Michael Penn. But he doesn't really play out that much. Like, it's hard to get him to go on tour. So that's, that was kind of just a one-time thing.
Well, he's busy scoring movies. I think that's his main, and TV shows now is his big...
He's scoring that show Girls, which is so terrific. I love that show.
Cool. So are you able, since he's more home now, when you're not touring, you have a normal, regular kind of home life. Is that true? Like, are you a regular married couple? As opposed to if you were both touring all the time separately, and et cetera.
Do laundry and, yeah, like... You know, cooked chicken.
Good. Oh, good.
That's what you're asking.
Yeah, all right. No, that's
pretty,
fine. I mean,
pretty normal.
Was there a decision, and I'm sorry if this is kind of a somewhat too personal question, but was there, so you're 52 years old now, so was there a specific decision at one point that, you know, you weren't going to have kids, or just never happened?
That's probably a little too personal. I think I don't really want to talk, you know, tell people about my reproductive decisions necessarily.
Well, that also leads to the question, because everybody's writing their autobiography now. Dylan's working on Chronicles 2. Neil Young, who said he'd never write an autobiography, he broke his toe, now he's writing one. Do you have a Chronicles in you or in the works?
No, I don't think so. I was actually approached by a publisher a couple of years ago to do that. But I just think writing prose is very difficult. It's totally different from writing songs. It's... I don't think I would be particularly good at it, and I don't really have much of an urge to try it either, so I can't really imagine that happening.
What is it about then writing poetry? Actually, let me ask you, do you ever write poetry that isn't specifically connected to music?
No, it's just, songwriting's my thing. It's got the two of them together. It's very, to me, it's a very specific art form, and I'm not... You know, I think trying to master any other art form is just, it's beyond my abilities.
Well, in another interview, you said that had you been something else, if you could have been, it would have been a graphic artist, which I guess we see in your most recent sort of album art. I mean, when did that suddenly have that grip on you? I wouldn't call it anime. I guess it's just graphic art.
I went through a phase where I was doing a lot of cartooning, or just, you know, like a lot of drawing on the road just to kind of pass the time. But, you know, it's another thing that I think that if you haven't started, you know, a long time ago and been doing it a lot, it's just too time consuming. You know, it's starting out from square one on an art form and you know, I mean, graphic novelists, like, even from the people I know who have been doing it years and years and years and years and are just, the kind of stars in the field, it still takes them, like, 8 years to do, you know, a book. So I think it's, like, the input, you know, the output level is just too low for me.
Well, and I only wish that you were releasing albums a little more frequently myself. There was a time when it took a long while, maybe because it was, you were also trying to be chief cook and bottle washer for your career and for your record company. How is Super Ego doing?
Well, Super Ego just exists to put out my records. It's not, I'm not like trying to be a, you know, record mogul and release other records. So, you know, it does as well as I do. You know, it's pretty much my, you know, my manager and we have a couple of people in the office that are really terrific, and they just work like crazy and do the best they can in this, you know, sort of weird climate of, you know, where people are kind of used to, you know, just taking things instead of, you know, buying them. You know, so it does as well as it can, I think.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if for you, I think for a lot of artists, the paradigm has now shifted where you make your money touring in live concerts. And then if you're selling CDs, you're basically selling them at the concerts and, you know, making money by autographing them and handing out T-shirts and stuff.
I think that's a misconception because, you know, I mean, the tour I'm going, that I'm about to do, you know, to support this new record, is I break even. So there isn't any money. And I'm not, you know, some bands I think are bands that sell a lot of merchandise, but I think in general those are more sort of rock bands and heavy metal bands. Like, you know, I think singer-songwriter fans, like, just don't tend to buy a ton of T-shirts and stuff. So it isn't a thing that, you know, I mean, if I went out solo, I could probably make some money, but the overhead of touring is very, you know, it's very high. So, you know, it's not, I mean, I think, like, people do think, like, oh, I'll just take this record because who cares? Like, she can make money touring, but that's, you know, that's not really the case.
So is I guess, certainly for someone like you then, maybe the money, to put a very blunt word on it, is actually from when your song is used on a TV show or in a movie.
Yeah, I mean, if you're lucky enough to get that, but those things are going down too, because I think the climate is just such that people just kind of feel money, you know, that song, that music is not really worth anything anymore, and so they don't really pay very much anymore. And also, you know, like, television shows and movies and stuff, like, they're also suffering from pirating, so their budgets are going down, and, you know, like, their profits are going down, so, like, they don't pay as much for that kind of thing, and, you know.
Well, you've got the United Musicians front, as it were, that you help form, but what would be a solution? I mean, how do you tell people, if you want them to discover all this new music, you know, not the stuff that they've been buying for years and years, but new artists, how do they get to that without having to pay a lot, because nobody's got a lot of money right now.
Well, but it's not hard. I mean, everybody has, like, a, you know, like, we stream the record, you know, for free before it's released. Like, it's not hard to find what somebody sounds like. I mean, I think nobody expects you to buy a record sight unseen. But, you know, if you are downloading it, then you should buy it, you know? Like, I mean, that just seems to be kind of just fair.
Right.
So, it's very easy to find a streamed version just to check something out.
And can I ask, when you're not looking, when you weren't trying to plan the sound and the feeling of Charmers, what music were you listening to? What was on your iPod? What were you paying for?
I listen mostly to classical music right now.
Oh.
Just, you know, I just got into the habit of, like, when I was in the car, because there's a great classical station, KUSC, and, yeah, so the last two records I bought were, Chopin, like, piano pieces and like, some Schubert Lieder or something.
Huh. And do you think that might, or are you hoping it will influence you? This is kind of, you have to separate sometimes and just, I'm just listening to this for me, or you can't do that.
I don't think it, you know, I mean, yeah, I listen to it to kind of get away from everything else.
Cool. And speaking of getting away from things, one thing that your songs are sometimes personal, and then there's sometimes a lot of them are character studies, but I don't see you being very political in your songwriting, and you're an activist for artists' things, but not necessarily in politics. Obviously, we're coming up on a few weeks to another election. What are your feelings about artists who are political and that you don't write, let's say, protest songs or songs that are political in a certain way?
What do I feel about people who write?
Well, I'm sorry, that was such an all-over-the-place question, but in other words, like, you know, some artists are very out there and saying, you know, vote for so-and-so, or don't vote for so-and-so.
And I just don't know enough about politics to feel comfortable talking about it, and writing a song about politics is just kind of a weird thing. Like, it's just not interesting enough to me to write a whole song about it, and then, you know, it just seems sort of, like, too ephemeral, too, you know, like, I like to write about things that I think, you know, 2 years from now, you'll still be able to relate to.
And, actually, that also leads to another question of songs that you've written over the years. Are there a couple that have very special meaning or significance to you? I mean, I'm sure you love all your children, as it were, but are there a couple of songs that, you know, they're special?
I don't know. I think it really depends. You know, like, sometimes you'll find yourself playing something and then relate to it in a totally different way. I would say that my favorite song to play from this record right now is Slip and Roll. I'm sure that could change.
And is it usually a thing that you feel close to because it's a musical thing, or is it something in the lyrics when that happens?
I don't know. I mean, sometimes songs are just, I like playing them because they're easy to play, or, like, they're more in my range, or, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes there's songs that have a lot of words and that it's a little harder to sing, but it doesn't really have anything to do with whether you like the song or not. It's more of a performance thing.
We're wrapping up our conversation with Amy Mann. I'm wish you didn't have to go, but I know you only have a limited amount of time. I want to remind everybody that her new album, Charmers, has just dropped. You can see it on her website. You can buy it. You can pay money for it, as you should. And also pay money to go see her in concert at Denver's Ogden Theater on Tuesday the 9th, and then in Fort Collins at Lincoln Center on the 10th. But I do want to ask, speaking of Charmers, what is the affinity that you found with comedians?
I think comedians, you know, they use language in a very specific way that I find really fascinating. And, you know, I mean, the really good ones, the ones I like. I just really enjoy seeing, you know, I mean, like, we're really good friends with Patton Oswalt, and, you know, when I see him perform, they're just, he picks really specific words that, you know, like another synonym just wouldn't be as funny and wouldn't be as perfect or cutting or whatever he's going for. And to me, that's just really fascinating.
And, yeah, I mean, I see that with Louis C.K. as well. It's the phraseology. It isn't big words. It's just the exactly right word.
Yes, exactly. That's just the perfect word.
And the last question for the last perfect words from the great Amy Mann is, are you one of those people who finishes your best songs in, like, half an hour, they just come out? Or does a song literally germinate for, like, 3 weeks? Or is it the usual mix, some do, some don't?
Yeah, mostly it's the germinating, but every now and then there'll be one that just comes out, and it's, you know, and that's really fun. Like, it definitely, you know, it's sort of more, you know, you do feel sort of better about it, I think, like when it happens all at once and you don't have to labor over it.
And then when you look back, do you feel like it was a special kind of inspiration, or was just, you know, 99% perspiration and then?
It's a little of both, but a lot of it is just working, and you know, you just got to keep at it.
Well, I'm thrilled that Amy Mann is keeping at her great and beautiful songwriting. Absolutely one of my favorites of all time. Go see her in concert. Go buy her new album, her older albums, especially the one she gets royalties from. And I want to thank you very, very much for taking the time.
Thank you so much, Dave.
And have a great concert. See you in Colorado.
Thanks. Great. Can't wait.
Bye-bye now.
Okay, bye.